Hey, this is Tyler, one of the hosts of RangerCast. On our show, we talk about Power Rangers and other multi-unit spandex heroes. We've got news, reviews, interviews. We talk about the comics, the games, the toys, and all things more phenomenal. Find us at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or check us out at RangerCast.net. May the power protect you.
Hey everybody, I would like to welcome you to another episode of Pop Culture Gems. This is a series where I, Davis Green, talk to amazing creators, artists, cosplayers, voice actors, and so much more. If you like the interviews we do with our terrific guests, like, follow, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, the CFG channel. We release Pop Culture Gems on all podcast services and also on our main website, confreaksandgeeks.com. If you'd like to support the podcast itself, you can always become a CFG member by going to our website, the CFG.store, for completely ad-free experience. Today, I am talking to an incredibly talented singer and voice actor. She has been killing it in the voice acting roles recently. She's played Sango Nomiya Kokomi in Genshin Impact, Futaba Igarashi in My Senpai is Annoying, Sajuna Inui in My Dress Up Darling. My fingers are crossed for a second season, by the way, for that.
We all have our fingers crossed for it.
I know, right? Kamiya Karu in the new Rurouni Kenshin, and her most recent and highly anticipated role, Beelzebub, in Sandland, the series, which you can watch now on Hulu, and the game that is coming out on April 26th. I am so excited to geek out with her today. I would like to welcome Risa May to the show. How are you doing today?
I am fantastic. And how are you? Thank you so much for having me here.
Oh, no, it's definitely a pleasure. I've been like I was saying earlier, I was like, man, I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time, but I'm so glad that we were able to get this finally done. So,
absolutely. So no, welcome.
It's awesome. But let's get into it. You have a strong background in music, what got you into voice acting?
So what got me into voice acting was I was cast for Jim Henson's Word Party. This was back in 2019, I believe it was, early 2019. And I was cast for the motion capture actor for Word Party because they needed somebody who was under 4 feet. They were looking for someone with dwarfism, and I've got dwarfism. So I was cast for that role, and they were looking for the voice actor as well for Tilly. And they noticed that I had a younger sounding voice, and they were like, you know, we wanted someone who can like understand and speak some Mandarin. And I was like, oh, cool, that's great, because if everything is being recorded live, then maybe I can understand what the voice actor is saying and puppeteering. Because so for Word Party, everything is recorded live. So we have the puppeteers all on one side of the room and all of us motion capture body performers in the middle of the room. And then they have monitors kind of all around where we can keep track of what the other person is doing. So I'll have my puppeteer, Alice Dinian, who's incredibly talented, puppeteering the face for my character, and then I would be moving around as the body, and she would occasionally also, you know, move the head around. But I initially thought that they were going to bring in a Chinese Mandarin speaking voice actor as well to kind of do her voice as we were recording, because most of the time all the other puppeteers had voiced their characters as well. And so I thought they were going to bring a Mandarin-speaking voice actor. So I told them during the auditions, I was like, oh, great, because I understand and I speak some Mandarin, so I'll be able to play off of their performance in the volume, you know. And they were like, oh, so you speak and understand a little bit? And I was like, very little bit, but yes, I do. And they were like, well, you've got a young voice. We might bring you in for the voice as well. So I was like, I've never done any voiceover work before, but that sounds fun. Let's do this.
Wow.
So I, you know, jumped in for the motion capture body performance part of it. We shot for a few months. And then at the end of the shoot, they brought me back in to do ADR in post because I wasn't able to say her lines or, you know, do the stuff while I'm out on the volume. They didn't have us mic'd up or anything out there. So they just brought me in after the fact and just had me match timing ADR. So that was kind of my first brush with voiceover work. Wow. And anime work or anything.
So wait a minute though, like how they normally, because I mean, this was a CG animated series, right? The one that Jim Henson did. Okay, so but they had puppeteers specifically, like they had the action. So you were just the body double. You weren't necessarily. Well, I mean, initially when you were doing the mocap, they didn't censor your face. They just did the body motion. You were just doing the body motions, and then they had someone else separately talking for the characters itself. That's how it initially worked.
Yeah. So, so what we did for Tilly specifically, is Alice, who was my wonderful, puppeteer for Tilly's face. She was over on the puppeteering rig and saying the lines as the character while I was acting out as the character, on the volume, where all of the motion was being captured by my body. So, you know, we had to learn a lot of choreography, a lot of blocking. You know, they were very, very long days. It's very physically taxing. But it was, you know, it's a lot of fun. And and so so Alice was voicing the character during our shoot. And then at the end of the shoot, they would bring me in and she would kind of be my guide track for timing. So I knew like when to come in, what she was doing and when, and to kind of like play off of the performances that we did as, you know, as a combined team. So it was really fun. Yeah. So it was really, it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge because then you're having to keep an eye on what the puppeteer is doing, you know. You're constantly keeping an eye on your eye line. You have all these monitors everywhere. So you're trying to match body with what the face is doing. And it's a whole nother beast. It's very interesting. It's fun work.
That's incredible. So like, I mean, so after you did, like after you got your taste in the voice acting, as your, which is an incredible experience to be your first voice acting role. So did you were like, were you just like, oh, I need some more of this, or tried or transitioned to more into like anime cartoons or anything else at that point, or like how did the rest kind of go into effect?
So I after that shoot, I actually flew back out to Japan because I was working on and off for several years over at the Universal Studios in Japan doing suit character acting. So I would fly over there for about 4 to 6 months of the year, depending on whether they have me in for a summer contract or for a summer and a fall contract. And so, you know, voiceover work didn't come back into my mind until I came back from Japan and I was grounded here because COVID happened and all productions closed down. They weren't bringing any more foreign talent into Universal in Japan. And so I was just completely out of a job and frantically looking for work online. And as I was looking for work online, I stumbled upon the voiceover Twitter community, and that was kind of what got the gears going in my head. And I was like, you know what? I really enjoyed doing voiceover work when I was recording for the Henson Company, and you know, we were talking about this earlier. You know that I did music and that I started off as a singer, so I had a lot of audio equipment just kind of from, you know, doing a lot of music, and I'd been acting my entire life. I just never thought to combine the two. And so finally, it was like this light bulb in my head came on, and I thought, why haven't I been trying to do this my whole life? Because I love this work, you know? I love the tech side of it. I love the creative side of it. It uses all of the skills that I've learned from the different facets of performing that I've done, and feels like it's this wonderful amalgamation of skills, you know, that I've had. Oh, and I finally get to put them to use together. So it was a huge epiphany kind of moment for me. Definitely.
That's incredible, because like you said, you're still relatively new in this. You're only about 4 years in, I should say, like roughly.
Yeah. Roughly.
And
if you include the Henson gig, then it's about 5 years, but it's like seriously pursuing it, setting my sights on it. Definitely 4 years.
Yeah. Technically, I kind of want to put an asterisk on the Henson one, because you didn't initially was like, you kind of took the opportunity and then you just went with it. And then you put, yeah. So no, but you're right though. You're right. So I'll say four and a half. Let's say four and a half. That's
good. I'll take that. The compromise.
Yeah. But like, even at that point, I mean, you immediately went out the gate. I mean, like you with Genshin Impact was relatively the beginning of your career. At the start of all that, then you also got like my senpai is annoying immediately, kind of like right after that. I mean, you've been making some pretty big bangers at, like initially from the start off, I would have to say, which is quite impressive. Oh, thank you. Yeah. And then on top of that, I would have to say though too, how do you get a gig to be like, you lived in California, then you flew to Japan to be a character performer at Universal Studios? I'm like, what is that? That is awesome. That sounds amazing.
it's so fun. And I feel like that's kind of the life of a performer. You know, your life just inevitably goes into so many different trajectories of performing work, because as an artist, as an actor, you live a very gig to gig lifestyle. And I've started that gig to gig lifestyle when I was 7 years old. I started at a very young age.
Wow, you started the grind real early.
I did. And I started off as a singer, but from doing singing, my mom, who had immigrated here from Indonesia, she was told by, you know, my teachers and people who were around me regularly in school that I could sing and that I could perform. And so my mom was like, oh, okay, cool. Then what do I do? And they were like, you should get her an agent. And I was like, okay. Why not? Yeah, you know, as like a 9-year-old, you're just like, okay, cool, sure, mom, whatever. And so my mom, bless her soul, she didn't, you know, fully understand the industry, and at the time especially, you know, and didn't know that there were different types of agents for different types of performing work. So she looked up a random agent and was like, here you go, audition for these people. And I ended up getting an agent for commercial work. Oh, wow. Commercial acting work. And it wasn't for singing, you know, like initially the goal was to get an agent who would help me find singing gigs, who would, look for singing stage opportunities like that. Not for commercial. It was just kind of happened that way, and it was a little confusing for me, but you know, we made it work.
Hey, you eventually found where you needed to get. I mean, you eventually got there, you know.
Yeah, really cool.
Wow, yeah. So crazy. Was the transition from voice acting difficult from or was it somewhat natural when you just started to kind of, from like, you know, you're singing, songwriting, and then and mocap as well? I mean, like, was that a, like, how hard was it for you to say, you know what, let me focus mostly on voice acting? And And how did it set you up?
So it's very different because the style of acting that I'd done was more so for either on camera.
Body moving and stuff.
Well, yeah, body performance, but also stage acting as well. The style of acting between stage acting to voice acting to on camera acting, they're all very different, you know, whereas like on camera, you get the more grounded performances where it's a lot more cinematic and it's a lot more intimate. And then stage is a lot more, it's a little bit more exaggerated, but that's because you are going to have to make sure that your actions are being read from all the way the back of the room, you know? Mm-hmm. And then voice acting work, depending on what kind of voiceover you're doing, can range between, you know, anywhere in that spectrum from cinematic, grounded, realistic to super zany cartoon, Western animation to anime work, where even that's a whole nother beast. So I would say there are definitely similarities between like the different styles of acting and swing singing as well. But I feel like the one common thing that threads it all together is being able to act, you know, having that foundation, that acting foundation, having that vocal foundation, because you want to make sure that as a voice actor that you're constantly able to protect your voice, and you're not going to damage it, because that's how you make money. Yeah. So that's your livelihood. You don't want to lose your livelihood.
Most definitely. When growing up, I mean, was there anything like pop culture things that you were into? Like, I mean, was it like anime, gaming, anything like that? Like, what kind of things were you, did a younger Risa May liked?
Young Risa was a huge nerd. she loved Cardcaptor Sakura. That was her favorite anime. Sailor Moon. Let's see. And I loved Kingdom Hearts. I was a huge Kingdom Hearts fan. Mm. And then I watched my cousins play a lot of like Final Fantasy games. So I grew up with a lot of that too. Mm. I did watch a lot of anime. I watched Inuyasha. I watched Pokemon, Digimon. You know, like all of that was a part of my childhood. And then being able to kind of work in all these properties that kind of were a part of my childhood, it's insane. And, you know, thinking that I might be someone else's childhood, it's a really, really humbling thought. Something that I never thought I would get to be a part of, you know? So it's really, really cool stuff.
It's kind of funny when like how it feels like the universe goes full circle when something like that happens or occurs. It's like, wow, who would have thought I'd be like playing this character ever in this deal or in things? So no, that's really cool.
Right.
Yeah. Cardcaptor Sakura, I do remember that one. I was like, oh wow, okay. Yes, I do remember that one.
Oh my god, hilarious. I like made my own cosplays and stuff. It was she was a cosplayer too. Young Risa was a cosplayer.
She was an inadvertent cosplayer, if I remember correctly, because wasn't her friend the one that was dressing up her like into these weird different outfits and stuff all the time? Like,
oh yeah, oh yeah. Cardcaptor Sakura, yeah. She was a cosplayer, not really by choice.
It just came in. It just came into effect.
Yeah. She just kind of unknowingly became a fashion icon for kids without realizing it because her friend put her in that position. It's wonderful.
That is hilarious. That's great. as I said before, I mean, but you have an incredible singing voice. Yeah. And by the way, folks, you got to subscribe to her YouTube channel. Love Misa Ray. You will not be disappointed. It's amazing. I have listened to your covers of For Good from Wicked and some other anime covers that you've done. Like, do you have like any kind of process or choosing of what songs you're wanting to cover?
No process at all. I'll just listen to a song and I'll be like, oh, I love singing this song. This is so cathartic to perform. I want to record this. And then I'll go and then I'll record it. That's just kind of been my process. Do I like the song? Do I like singing it? Yes, I enjoy it. Okay, then I'm going to do it. That is my creative process. Do I like it? Let's go do it.
It's like, there you go. Hey, you know, the simpler the better. Then, I mean, if you're enjoying it, then that's all that really matters. So, I love musicals thanks to my mom, but I'm a musical nerd. But the irony of all this is like, I have never seen Wicked. So like,
really?
Yeah, never
also,
seen it.
Also, it'll be perfect timing that the movie's coming out right at the end of the year.
Do you know what's funny about that? Like, so people are like saying, oh, so you're definitely waiting for the movie. I personally do not like musicals going into movies because they change a little bit. Like, the experience is a little different
to me.
The only one that I liked when it came to that was Les Miserables, the one with the Anne Hathaway.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job besides Russell Crowe, in my opinion. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, but they had pretty much pretty really good deals. But like, I mean, do you have and you said you've done plays and musicals. Like, what do you have any kind of favorite like musicals and stuff yourself? Like any personal good musicals?
Ooh. Wicked has to be my all-time favorite musical.
Really?
I grew up with it. Yeah, I grew up with it. And it was the musical that I went to go see with my friends when I was in high school. So, you know, a lot of memories attached with that musical.
Wow.
But I also love Hamilton. Hamilton's really, really good. And I don't know if you've heard of Six.
Oh, I've heard of Six. Oh, yeah.
Did you listen to the music?
Yes, I have.
Oh, good. This is,
that one is like, no, I really, it kind of sucks when you see musicals that are not known, but then they have really strong soundtracks. It's, yeah, Six is definitely a good one, I would definitely say. I've never seen it. I've just listened to the soundtrack, but I'm like, okay. But it's a great one.
Oh my gosh. So they recently held auditions for Six here in LA, and I was in, I think I was in Atlantic City. This was like sometime within the last 2 months because I was out in Atlantic City doing a Christmas show out there for the end of the year last year.
Oh, okay.
And so I wasn't here at all to the auditions. And so I saw the audition posting for it and had to just kind of sit there, watch the date pass by me. And I was like, this opportunity.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Oh no. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that one. Oh,
that's all right. I mean, there will be future opportunities, I'm sure. So it was just, you know, the one time when I checked, I think it was on Playbill that I checked it on, but I checked Playbill, I think it was, and I saw the audition listing and then I saw the dates and was just like, the one time that I'm not in LA for the winter.
Unbelievable. Have you have you seen Hamilton live, or have you ever
I have not seen Hamilton live. I've only watched it I think it was on Disney Plus. Was it
on Disney Plus? Yes, it was on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I watched it on Disney Plus. But I would love to watch it live.
Oh my god.
Really, I wanted have to say to.
I don't know now. I did back in 2016 when Lin Manuel was there, back in the day, like when it was there, and I was like, at first, because like this is my first time going to New York on Broadway too, so I was really sure, but because those prices were insane, I think even at for its time, I think I paid like almost like $600 for like mid seat, like some crazy seating up at the nosebleeds, but. I'd say this was like the best show I saw that time, and then after that I was starting like, okay, I need to go see other shows
they're so good, right?
Yeah, so good. But it's like, I was living in Arizona at the time, and then you know, like, you have those side troops and stuff, and you have other different kinds of it really depends on who's playing it on the show. Although I did see How to Succeed in Business Without Even Trying with Daniel Radcliffe was there. Back,
how was
like,
that? I didn't have a chance to watch that one.
That one is really good too. That it's an old one, but I think because of because I believe when Radcliffe was there, that was like in early 2012 or something, 2013. Excuse me. And him and John Larroquette were working really well, with it. I definitely would suggest it. You should definitely listen to the soundtrack to it.
That's so cool. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm definitely going to write that down then, because recently on my drives into studio, I've been checking out different musicals and new musicals that I haven't listened to yet. And what was my most recent one that I was listening to? Suffs. I don't know if you've heard of Suffs.
Suffs? No, never heard of that one.
It's new. It's very, very new. Suffs. Okay. But it's about the women's suffrage movement. And it's again like six, like one of those where the soundtrack is just amazing and should be getting a lot more attention than it has. Mm-hmm. You know? Okay, wait. Let me write down the one that you suggested. what was it called?
It was How to Succeed in Business Without Even Trying.
Yes.
Yeah, this is like in the 1950s kind of setting. So it's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of infuriating on how some of these people were being treated. But at the same time, it's like, it was the 50s. So there you go.
That's just the reality of it.
Yeah. And then there was this one, which I think it was with Josh Groban, it was about a train, or I cannot remember. If I remember, I'll just message you on.
For sure.
Really good. I don't know. I could talk about musicals all day.
But this is like, going to turn into a musical interview. Musical chat with Risa.
Exactly. It's like musical corner with Risa May. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. But, and by the way, I like you were saying before about like how you kind of came to voice acting. I just kind of want to get a little slightly more in depth. But like I'm super jealous of you, by the way, for that, because like one of my dreams was to go to Jim Henson's company, because I've always loved Muppets and like what they've done with Ninja Turtles and stuff, like everything back in the days. But and you worked there as a mocap artist as well as a voice actor. Like how was your experience when you were there? Like how was your experience overall when you were at the Jim Henson Company?
Oh man, working with the Henson Company feels like working with family. They've got a very, very warm production crew, warm castmates, you know, like everyone literally is just trying to look out for each other there. But it's the environment is incredible. We got to shoot in the Charlie Chaplin stage.
Wow.
So it's massive, huge soundstage, but it's incredibly dry, so we were just constantly hydrating in there. Like I had to have my eye drops at the ready, just like because it was so dry inside. It felt like a dream, you know. Like mm-hmm. I think is how I would describe it, just because the people, the environment, the whole process just. It felt unreal to me. It still feels unreal to me when I think back about it.
I mean, like, I'm just like, I've always loved, like I said, I've always loved Jim Henson and what he's done and what he contributed, really, because I mean, he basically made his own style. I mean, essentially of like puppetry and everything, like all the way, how everything, physical puppetry. And I don't know how the CG animation is. And just the level of history on being with that, and just and saying that you're I did a project with the Jim Henson Company. It's very, very admirable, I'd say. And also like just on you've done pretty much a lot of different facets in your career. I mean, you like with singing, voice acting, stage acting, mocap, and just like mocap, like I'm really interested in like how mocap acting is like what is like how is the experience, like the experience of mocap just seems very foreign to me, but I know like how much you have to do, you know, the movements, the range and stuff. Like how difficult is specific like mocap doing mocap?
So mocap work is if anyone listening has done suit character work, that's kind of what it feels like. Mm-hmm. Because you're not necessarily inside a full fur suit, mm-hmm. But you kind of have to act like you're in one, especially, well, yes and no, because it comes down to the character that you're acting for, right? In my case, because I was acting as a character that is not a human, I kind of had to treat it the way that I was treating suit character work, where, you know, like arms out to the sides, like legs this far apart. You have to make sure not to clip into the character model. Your movements, also because you're depending on the shot, whether it's close up or if it's a wide shot, you know, or if it's a medium shot, you kind of have to tailor your movements to how close the shot is. So it kind of almost feels like a combination of, I would say, stage and on-camera work. Because with stage work, you know, especially if you're doing stage suit character work, you're having to exaggerate your movements a little bit more, just so people all the way in the back can read what you're trying to portray as your character on the stage. And so there's a lot of, you know, that character movement, but then also keeping in mind, like, how close is this shot going to be? Are my movements going to be too exaggerated for the camera, you know, while still trying to maintain character? And so there's a lot of intricacies to it. Sorry, what was the main gist of your question?
I was just thinking about you pretty much explaining it, because like I've just really wanted, the way of movement seems like you have to be very particular on how you're, like, what your role is in the situation, right. Which is very, I mean, you were a baby turtle crying out loud. And and you can't, like, you have to be very aware of how you're moving as with that character without wearing a turtle suit, which is like, it's
bizarre.
Very odd.
It is kind of an odd feeling. And then I also wanted to add, so when we were shooting for Word Party, and I don't know what this is like for other projects as well, because I feel like, of course, everything kind of differs from one project to the next. So, you know, other people may have had a different experience. Excuse me. But when we are out on the volume, we have monitors kind of on, you know, kind of all around us. But most of the time when we're looking up towards the front, our actions are mirrored from us to our monitors.
So it's reversed.
So I would be raising my right arm and then my character would raise their left hand. And then that's something that I have to keep an eye on, because I'm not only interacting with characters that are out on the volume, which is a little bit easier because, you know, they're, you know, the other mocap actors, like, they're physically in person with you. But also sometimes you have to act in these imaginary spaces where you don't have necessarily like a full visual on like where exactly the table starts and ends, where the chair starts and ends. And so you're having to kind of work around these imaginary digital spaces reversed, with like the mirror image.
That is insane. That sounds like the most difficult thing to really kind of do at that point, because like
you
have to literally big brain what your movements are, and knowing that whatever you're doing, it's going to be in the reverse way of what you're doing it. And it's like, that's a lot. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was bizarre, especially when I first started. And I am so lucky for my castmates. Michelin Sisti, I think I'm saying his name right. But they kind of guided me through the character mocap acting process when I first got into it. Because, you know, I had never done motion capture performance before at that point. Well, not with the silver balls. I'd done kind of like more so body capture performance acting, where I was just kind of like in a green screen moving things around, you know, for people, for commercials, but never with the silver balls on myself. I was moving the silver balls around. So it's a whole thing. It's very interesting.
That's very fascinating, I just have to say. But Were there any roles that you've played that Were there any roles you played that may have been like more challenging than what you than average or what you that you've ever experienced?
I can now talk about this. Yay! So I the most challenging role that I've had has to be Beelzebub from Sandland.
Really? Oh,
okay. Yeah. And it's not that the character is incredibly, you know, difficult, but it's because when I was recording for Beelzebub last year, I was on a massive time crunch. I had to go to Atlantic City for the Christmas show, I believe in, at the end of October, but that was kind of still in the middle of a whole bunch of companies like production season. Mm-hmm. And so I had to cram in Sandland within, I think we ended up recording in like three months. August, September, October, two months, okay. About 2-ish months. Yeah. But we had to cram it all in to get all of the sessions in within the time frame that I had, you know. And then not only was I just doing Sandland, but I was also doing a bunch of other roles as well. So I was regularly doing anywhere from 12 to 15 hour days. And I ended up developing laryngitis because I was trying to cram so many things in. And Beelzebub's voice isn't particularly easy to maintain for a long time because he's, you know, constantly at a 10 and he's got, you know, young boy raspy voice and it's a little bit textured. So having to maintain that for 4 hours, and I was recording that daily. So I was going into studio every day. And on top of that, I was also trying to maintain other clients and other voice work. And it took a toll on my health. I tried to be as careful with it as I possibly could, but because I had to be out of California by the end of October, you know, everybody was trying to wrap me as fast as they could.
Yeah. It sounds like it was a perfect storm, essentially, because it's like...
It really was. It was a lot.
It sounds like the character itself wasn't quite as easy as well as your normal regular time crunch. It's like, my goodness. That is terrible. Yeah. When you said 14, 15 hour days, but this isn't just for one role. This is like all the stuff you were doing,
Yeah. This is because I was trying to cram so many things into a day within a string of like 2-3 months. And it just wasn't very smart. I probably should have said no to some stuff, but,
you gotta admit, though.
Alas, I totally admit, the curse of being a people pleaser. What do you do?
Some of those roles, you must be like, I gotta do this, though. I mean, some of these are like,
I really you do. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I looked at some of the stuff that I booked, and I was just like, but I want to do this. You know, like the fangirl in me was screaming, but my body was just like, stop it, Risa. Go get yourself some rest.
Yeah, no
Stay
kidding.
Away from the computer.
like the laryngitis, that must have been pretty,
Yeah. I mean, I've recovered from that pretty well, but I went straight from like the 12 to 15 hour days, and then we went to Atlantic City. And because I was still maintaining clients and voiceover work here while I was doing rehearsals and trying to mount a show out there, I was also consistently doing about like 10 hour days when I was there. So I went from doing like 12 to 15 to like 10 hour days, but it was still, you know, like compared to like the 12, 15 hour days, I was just like, I'll take the 10.
Non-stop. That's what it is. That's what it sounds like. Just non-stop. Wow, that's incredible. And also, which role that you've played you could relate to the most, and why?
Which role can I relate to most? Let's see. I feel like the role that I can relate to the most is a character who isn't even, you know, it's not on like a prominent piece of media. It's I don't know if you're aware of like Arcade Spirits.
Yes,
the challenger. You are? Oh, yes. That's awesome. That's so cool. I love that.
It's Man, I'm a bona fide nerd. I definitely know all the most of this stuff.
That respect. People know it. I have so much respect for you. That's so cool. But I play Jinx in Arcade Spirits, and
that was an indie game, right? That was the one that was on Steam. Yeah. Wow.
I was in that. But the character that I played, she has a physical disability, syringomyelia, and you know it's a disability that affects her spinal cord, her movements, and she has a lot of pain that kind of comes with it, and she has to work around it. And I felt like with all of her struggles that she's faced, I kind of saw parallels of that in my own life, and it was really touching to see that in a piece of media that I loved, you know, in a character that looked so cool. Like her character design was just so badass. Like she was a goth girl and she was a gamer and she looked amazing. Like she was hot. And I was like, yes, like hot disabled girl, please. Yes. And
that's cool.
Yeah. And that was, it was so cool to be able to record for a character with what felt like very similar challenges that I faced.
Yeah, I love that. I definitely love that. I mean, the idea. I mean, well, first off, I'd have to say I that's surprising. I did not like Arcade Spirits was like a indie hit in my eyes, like when it came out, and I didn't even put two together on that. But I definitely love that you pulled from, I mean, from like a character like that. Like, did some of your real life kind of did you incorporate yourself with that character when you were playing her or yeah?
I definitely was able to bring some of the experiences that I faced and some of the hardships and struggles that I had to deal with and carry it over into the character. And so like I said before, it's very rare to get to play a character with, you know, the similar physical limitations that I have. She doesn't have dwarfism, but you know, with the back issues, with the chronic pain, with the disabilities, that's something that I regularly had to deal with growing up, and still occasionally do if I push myself too hard on a, like physically on any given day. So, yeah.
I mean, you were doing mocap for that's a lot.
I know.
Wow.
I was.
And I mean, you weren't having those. Were there ever days when you were doing that? That was like, I mean, that must have been pretty excruciating.
Yeah. I've definitely had my fair share of, you know, like, wow, I am in pain. But I was also very diligent with trying to stretch myself out at the start of the day, at the end of the day, in between scenes, in between takes, like as much as I could, just kind of regularly, gently stretching myself out, just so I won't pay for it as much later, you know.
Right.
But I feel like being a little person, you know, the pain that kind of comes with it is, it's become so normal for me that it's not something that I even think twice about anymore. It's just like, at the end of a day, I'm like, ooh, my knees hurt. Ooh, my back hurts. You know, it's like, whatever. That's normal Risa stuff. That's okay. I'll just put a heat pack on it and we're good.
I love it too that it's not even it's not even limiting you on doing what you're wanting to do overall too. So that's also very, very great. That's great to hear too. So And I mean, and just having with dwarfism, I can only imagine the battles that you experienced just in the industry itself. I mean, like, What did, like, could you, like how is the, I mean, I think voice acting is a perfect outlet for, like, whatever you're wanting to do itself. But then also just going through, like, live action, like you were saying, live action, theatrical and stuff like that. Like, how, okay. like, how hard is it to kind of get a non-stereotypical role for, like, for a person that does have dwarfism?
So having dwarfism in the industry is, it's really tough. I'm not going to mm-hmm. skirt around it. Mm-hmm. It's knowing that you will probably never book any lead character roles. Coming to terms with the fact that you are probably not going to be booked for, you know, random extra roles that the next person can book very easily. I'm never going to be the cash register at a supermarket in, I don't know, in a random TV series, you know, I am never going to be just like a passenger on a train because I stick out too much. I look too different. And it's very interesting growing up in the industry because I was able to experience the whole, I used to get sides as that were looking for kids, you know. Like when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, like I would get auditions where they're like, hey, we're looking for kids. Come play somebody that's kind of your age. And then eventually I started getting sides for, we need someone who can play a character. We need someone who's obviously a dwarf. We need someone who can do creature stuff. You know, all of a sudden it just, it feels dehumanizing because I go from being able to be considered for roles that are for characters my age, roles that are for humans, you know, to creatures. And a lot of the roles that look for little people can be very derogatory. We're sensationalized a lot in media. It's very rarely that you'll find a little person kind of in a random piece of media where they're just doing normal, everyday human things.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a shame. And I mean, just
in my mind, I could really think of maybe one and a half. I mean, is with the dude from Game of Thrones.
Peter Dinklage really set the bar. Like that is the standard that we should aim for.
It kind of stinks though. But, when I think of it, because I mean, besides you, Risa, I mean, like I know other people that are like incredibly talented, just like you are, and it's just like, and I feel like when you hit that, when you see that, like when you hit that age, like you were saying, when you hit that age of adulthood, and then the only roles that you're getting are, oh, we need you to dress up as this, and then as that, and then you're just not even giving anyone a chance, because I mean you're an incredible singer, I would say, and stuff, and it's just disheartening to see. I was just, and I will never experience what you've experienced on that, but I could just only imagine the frustration, and I do apologize.
No, kind of, I mean,
put yourself on the downward on that, but
yeah. No, oh my gosh, no, not even. I love talking about these experiences because I feel like it helps the industry and it helps people when I can bring this awareness to them, just so they know, you know, the struggles that we as little people face in the industry. So it's definitely not a bad thing. And I, you know, even though I've been put through the ringer with some of it, I want people to know what it's like to be a little person in the industry.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. But I just want to let you know that, yeah, but I definitely don't defy you by the dwarf, your dwarfism at all. It's just, you do a lot of excellent stuff. So
thank you.
And that's all I care about. Yeah. So, well, let's get into a better note on that. So no way to transition out of that that well, but my last question here is like your latest role, Beelzebub, in the upcoming like Sandland itself. I'm looking forward to trying the game out that's coming out April 26th itself. But like, what is the best way you would describe Beelzebub himself, Beelzebub as a character?
He does not take kindly to compliments. It's kind of like watching a character in did you watch the Sabrina, the Teenage Witch on Netflix? With all of like the dark humor and everything. I feel like it kind of falls in line with that, where you know, where he's just like he's this really, really mischievous character. He's basically like a 10-year-old boy, mm-hmm. but 10-year-old demon boy. So 10-year-old boy, but throw demon into the mix, you know. Yes. He's a fun guy, he's a fun character.
He seems very fairly like rambunctious for like, you know,
very rambunctious, very, very rambunctious, you know. Oh, man. He thinks he can do literally anything and everything, a little bit arrogant. You know, which he's like, I am the group leader. That's Beelzebub.
Oh, man. Straightforward. It's just straightforward and to the point. Like, or he walks to the beat of his own drum, it sounds like.
He does.
I just cannot wait to try this out. I'm glad. Also congrats on being the lead on that one.
Thank you.
And I mean besides the 2 months crunch time you had, it sounds like you must have had a pretty good time playing him too as well.
I did. I had so much fun developing his character and the cast and crew, and they, like, everybody had a lot of fun with the project. And what an honor to be a part of Akira Toriyama's work.
I know, you know? Right?
And I actually, so fun fact, not so fun fact, but I actually wrapped the anime series recording for that about an hour before the press news was sent out of Akira Toriyama's passing.
Wow.
And so it was insane, like finishing up the project. And then like on the drive home, I see this news going like, hey, Akira Toriyama's passed. And I was just like,
it was jarring. It was a punch in the gut. It was at night and you just mm-hmm. like at 8 o'clock at night, my time. And I'm just like, Akira Toriyama passed away. And I'm just like, what? That can't be right. I mean, he really wasn't that old, you know?
No, he really wasn't. It came as a shock to me because we just, you know, wrapped the anime. Like, I was on this, you know, project wrap high, and I was like so excited to see everything come together, because now I was done recording. I think they only had like one more day of recording left, and that was pretty much it. They were wrapping too. And so I was like, wow, I literally was thinking how cool this is, you know, for Akira Toriyama to have his new franchise, you know, releasing soon, like all of the different projects from it are finally wrapping up, the game, the anime series. And then he's going to be able to watch it internationally, you know, in all of the different languages that it's being translated to. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that must be such a cool moment, like as a creator, you know. And then for all of us cast and crew, like we were all so hyped for it. And then the news came and I was just like, I wish I didn't think that. Because it was just like, oh, God.
It's terrible. Just thought about something though. Like, since you played on both sides, which one would you say was more difficult to do? Would you say the game side or the anime side of that specific series?
I would definitely say the video game side, because video games in general, I feel like, are a lot more vocally intensive. And so that was kind of when I had a lot of my struggles with my voice, and with laryngitis, having to kind of like work through, like, as I was recovering from laryngitis, having to work through that as well. That was a full challenge. And then also, because we recorded the game first, you know, like any piece of media that you start work on, it's the whole figuring out who the character is, developing the character, getting into their mindset. And all of that exploration process happened as we were recording for the game, because the game was what we had recorded first. Whereas when we, you know, came in to record the anime, it was almost like coming back to an old friend, because I'd recorded for him before. And so it was like, hey, I get to come back into this world and play again as this character that I already know really well. So it didn't feel like starting from scratch, whereas for the video game, it did. And then also for Sandland, the game, we had to record ADR, but not to picture, but we did ADR to sound. So that was very fascinating. Yeah, because they didn't have the pictures ready, which is totally fair. They were just asking for me to try and match sound as much as possible, try to land where the syllables landed, just so they could match it up to picture later on. And so that was new for me, and that was interesting. That was tough.
Yeah, that's a big shout out to the ADR, to like audio, the audio engineers too. That must have been
absolutely. They were the MVP for this. Geo at Side LA, you are awesome. You probably won't see this, but
that is so cool.
No, wow. I'm so lucky to work with the people that I work with, because they've got my back.
Oh man, Risa, you did not disappoint. It was awesome to talk to you today. Thank you for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. The pleasure was all mine. I had fun. You were a joy to chat with.
Thank you. And folks, you could check out, if you like the interview I did with Risa May, you could definitely check it out on all podcast services like Apple, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, all awesome podcast services out there. Or go to our main website and check out the full archive on our website, confreaksandgeeks.com. Well, once again, this is Davis signing out. Y'all, take it easy.